United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobert, and today my guests are Don Stewart and Mark Staples, and they're here to discuss the secession of the Richard Stewart Project on Black Lutheran History. And it's my honor and pleasure to welcome you to the Seminary Explorers.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you're able. Glad we're able to find time to have you here, and so that you can share what you've been doing in the past few months. First of all, what is the project about?
50 years ago, Rich began investigating, researching Black Lutheran history. And in his retirement, he received a grant to continue that research during his retirement. But so the focus has always been Blacks and Lutherans in the U.S., in the church, the U.S. church.
Okay. And you two, both of you, you and Mark, have been involved in one part of that succession. That is, could you share with our listening audience what you two have been involved in doing?
So Dr. Stewart always had a vision for a website that would be governed somewhat by a timeline, so that when personalities are introduced from the history, those desiring to access the website and learn more about them could see where they, when they lived, and actually go into the website and access their background that way. So with that in mind, Don and I had the idea of going to United Lutheran Seminary's Philadelphia campus, going to the periodical section, and going through magazines, mostly the Lutheran Standard, and Partners Magazine, to see what we could find in the way of articles that had been written about leading lights in Lutheranism, I would call it. Dr. Richard Perry, who's part of the succession plan, suggested that the most fertile years that we might look at include 1973 to 1986, I happened to work on the magazine at that time. So what we did was we would go to the library and take a year and go through the periodicals for a year or more, maybe in a particular day. We worked on that for about 2 years.
Okay, and you were looking specifically for articles dealing with African-American Lutheran history and the personalities?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, okay. That takes a lot of eye energy, I'll put it that way. It takes a lot of reading. And you found this material in the archives at United Lutheran Seminary, in the library archives, etc. Okay. And what, did you get any help from anyone in doing this?
I think that most of the help was on our own, to go down and look through the files, get directions to the locations for the periodicals. And as I said, Dr. Perry suggested some fruitful years for us to look at. And then as we took each, we started with the indices, the index for each period.
Okay.
And one of the challenges that presented to us was you couldn't always tell whether the article in question in the index involved Black leaders or not. You really had to literally page through each of the issues. I'll give you an example. There was an article called Pastor and Publisher. That was about Will Herzfeld when he was a pastor in Oakland.
And for our listening audience, who was Will Herzfeld?
Will Herzfeld was Bishop of the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches, which later merged to be part of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Oh, okay.
But he was also a parish pastor, very, very effective pastor. And one of his parishioners was Bob Maynard, who was the publisher of the Oakland Tribune. And that was an award-winning, I think they won the Pulitzer. He turned that paper around, and so the two of them became very, very good friends in the church in Oakland.
Okay, and so which leads me to ask, as you comb through these materials, what were the stories, articles, and personalities that sparked your attention, if you could share some of those with our listening audience?
Well, I began doing research before Richard Perry suggested in 1963, simply because I was thinking about my teenage years, my formative years, and wondering where the church was and what the church had to say. And I began looking in the Lutheran Standard to begin with, because I didn't know much about the American Lutheran Church. That was the periodical for their church.
Okay.
And I didn't know very much about that, and I wanted to see who in the ALC we might be overlooking.
Right.
And so I began looking very early, and in the Lutheran Standard, frankly, there wasn't very much.
Okay.
And even when we got to the point of the late 60s, 68, at the point of urban crisis, what I discovered in the Lutheran Standard mostly was what wasn't there.
And
So there were some articles about civil rights, but what I discovered there was that most of them were imported from other periodicals. They weren't written by ALC Lutheran people.
Oh, okay. So they collected materials.
Yes.
For the magazine. Okay.
Yes. And so any hints that I got from the Lutheran Standard oftentimes were from photos, or what I was noticing about every year in the Lutheran Standard, they would list all the seminary, they would picture all the seminary graduates. And what I noticed was that most oftentimes, if there were people of color, they were from Africa or from some other continent. They weren't African-American pastors
okay.
that were being trained at the seminary.
From the years 1979 to 1987, I found 267 articles of black leaders of one kind or another. Many, of course, were rostered leaders or people familiar through the hierarchy of the church, I guess. I'm thinking of James Gunther. Will Herzfeld would be another one. And there were many rostered leaders. James Capers. I wrote an article on James Capers, for example. But what I think struck me the most was there were so many lay leaders, all walks of life, who were making a difference in the church, sometimes beneath the radar.
Could you give an example?
Sure.
Of some of these lay leaders? Because I think that would be very important for our listening audience to know of the people who help with the church.
So Sylvia Pate was
a high-ranking
executive in the U.S. Air Force who made a big difference. Alonzo Krim was the superintendent of the school district in Atlanta. Gorham Black was the first secretary of aging in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Those are three that I can think of. And they were, but the thing that goes beyond that, I think, is the LCA magazine, Lutheran Church in America, Lutheran magazine, had a section called People. They also had a news section.
Right.
And there were many folks, and I can't name them necessarily, but from unique parts of the country who had won awards or served their communities so that they were being recognized. and places like Fargo, North Dakota, places that you don't think of having
people of color,
African American Lutheran leaders, and they were coming up all the time. So of those 267 articles, we're talking about feature articles, we're talking about news stories, and we're talking about little snippets that with a picture. And sometimes the only reason I knew that a people item involved a person of color was because it ran with a picture.
You couldn't
just tell from the name.
Right, right, exactly.
Well, and an example of that is in 64, I noticed in the Lutheran magazine a picture of Richard Stewart when he was elected the Ohio Luther League president.
Your husband.
Yes. And there really wasn't, there was the picture, there was the listing of the officers that had been elected, and that was it.
No, I remember seeing that picture.
Yes. But the other thing, besides all of these people, just little snippets of people, I noticed that in the Lutheran magazine when I went there, that in 65, Lee Wesley wrote two articles that were pretty raw in terms of what it meant to be a Black American.
And I, if I recall, Lee Wesley was from the Augustana Lutheran Church.
Became a part of the LCA.
Exactly.
Yes.
And what did he say there? Could you share a little?
Well, he talked about his difficulty growing up as a Black American.
Okay.
And he talked about how difficult it felt to fit in. And he began, a second article was beginning to talk about, in response to the urban crisis, how he saw the urban crisis as an African American.
Oh, okay. Huh. So to expose the church to the difficulties.
Yes.
Of a Black person or Black Lutheran person in these United States.
Yes. And there were, in the Lutheran also, during that period of time, I happened to look at a lot of the information about what synods were struggling with. So there was always, in the articles, after the synod assemblies, there was often news about what the synod assemblies were talking about. And noticing how many of the synods were struggling with issues about civil rights, equitable housing, some of those kinds of urban issues also. And so they're not things that you would ordinarily just see as a main article.
Right.
They're just hints of what was happening in the larger church and in the discussion about race particularly and urban issues. Sure. And the Lutheran was had many different articles about that. The one of the earliest ones too was in 1965 was Vernon Carter, who was from pastor in Boston, and he was he had a boycott on the education system.
Okay.
And so he was, I think he had a van, and he was parked outside of the school board in Boston for a really long time, asking for equitable education for Black students in Boston. And eventually he was, the governor wrote some, made some redress or addressed some of that in the Boston area. And there's a picture in the Lutheran of Vernon Carter and the governor together.
Governor Volpe, I believe that was.
Okay. Okay. Well, interesting stuff. As you were going through these pages in the various denominational magazines, what surprises did you find, do you think? Or can you recall?
I think the biggest surprise was the I had written an article which explained that we had fallen short of achieving the amount of membership of people of color in the denomination. I believe that was perhaps in, I think it was 1979 or something like that. I may have the year wrong. I apologize. But I think the surprise then was that we were finding a lot of faces of black leaders on the pages of the magazine, despite that shortcoming. We've been called the whitest denomination in the country. That may well be true, but I think, for example, James Capers, whom I interviewed 40 years ago, went on to become an influential musician in the church.
Right.
He's written portions of the sixth setting that's found in the current Cranberry worship book, but he had at least a dozen songs in This Far by Faith, the African-American hymnal that I was privileged to attend the dedication of that book in Chicago when it happened, because I was on the Augsburg Fortress board. But I would say those are a couple of surprises. They're joyfully being able to discover a musician that had that kind of influence in the church, and also to find everyday people. I can't remember his name, but there was a young trumpet player with the Boston Symphony who was African-American, who as a teenager performed with the Boston Symphony.
Oh, my.
I mean, that's a wonderful surprise. So for anyone who wanted to look, you could see the impact that black leaders were having in the church, even though some would say we fell short of being all that we wanted to be.
Right.
I think, too, was noticing the voices of black Lutherans speaking out and saying, particularly around the urban crisis time period, we need more black pastors. We need more black rostered pastors. And the watching, because we're looking through this sweep of time in these periodicals, noticing the efforts that were going into recruiting black rostered leaders with Grover Wright.
Oh, and, yes, I remember him.
Lay Associates program that was developed in training people and trying to encourage people toward the ministry, which they had some success with. And I believe that that effort was probably the reason that my husband Richard was asked to do some of that research in the first place, mm-hmm. about black and Lutheran history. So Grover Wright had asked him to do that so long ago, but I think part of it, I'm coming to understand that I think part of it was to help in the recruitment of African-American leadership in the Lutheran Church.
Exactly. On the other hand, what were some of the difficulties, if any, did you have in doing your research?
Well, I think Mark has named one of them, is that sometimes when they're talking about people, you don't know whether they're really African-American or not, unless there's a photograph.
Photojournalism is important.
I think another factor, at least for me, was it is laborious. I mean, we would go and do a day of research that I think we went on for about 2 years, and it took a while each day to get through all the pages we wanted to get through. And yet the library was a wonderful resource for us. I had a special part of this journey in the sense that I worked from 1973 to 86 for the magazine. So some of it was finding anew the stories I had once known firsthand. I'll mention a personality that's an unusual person that I discovered. Just for a moment, in 1986, we ran a story on Lutherans in the Defense Department of the U.S. I got the idea that we were reading a lot of articles about war and peace in those days, about nuclear weapons. And I got curious. I said, now, who are some of the people that actually work in this department who might also be Lutheran?
Right.
And one of the people that that we came across was named Bob Miller. He's from church in San Leandro, California, I believe, who was working in the Department of Defense at that time. And he really gave a cogent little profile about his work and what it meant to him. And a person of faith, a black person of faith. So that certainly was a surprise to come across him. But that was a great thing.
Again, as you stated earlier, that, you know, there are a lot of lesser known people in our church. You know, we know the clergy, we know the rostered leaders, the diaconal lay associates in ministry, but the person in the pew we don't hear about or don't notice.
Well, there were other people too, not only just people in the pews, but other people that were appointed to positions in the ELCA. Mm-hmm. That if you look and just pay close attention to these little news snippets, you can see people of color being added, gradually added to the staff.
Oh, okay.
Of the LCA and then the ELCA also, but particularly I'm thinking the years of the LCA, and seeing the church's response in spite of the fact that if you look at the whole magazine, you can see the movement from racial justice, moving on to concerns about Vietnam, moving on to other concerns about family kinds of, you can see trends in what were the big concerns. But throughout all of that, I could gradually see the LCA putting people on their staff in a variety of kinds of positions that served all different kinds of jobs in the church offices.
Okay, thank you. In your investigation, let me rephrase it, how will your work, your investigation, be shared with the public as well as with scholars in the field?
What we're trying to do first, I think Don found a lot of articles. I know I had 267 because I kept track. We're trying to pick out stories as the website goes to life, which will be hopefully before the end of this year, that we think are especially important to the history of the church. But we realize we can't just simply post 260 pieces all at once. It's going to take some time to do that. So the website will be a place where scholars, current scholars, future scholars, who maybe have a question, well, what has Black history been in our church? How do we learn more about it? So they can go to a timeline. They can hopefully find a name of someone and look on the timeline to see when that person lived and more of that story. In some cases, we have multiple stories that where a person appears. Will Hirschfeld is a good example. I know I keep bringing his name up. Alonzo Krim, who was the superintendent of schools in Atlanta, served, I think, on the executive council of the LCA. Dorothy Ricks was a lay associate in Philadelphia at Reformation Church on Vernon Road in Philadelphia, and she joined the staff of DMNA and oversaw really the work of all lay associates at one time, I believe. So finding what I'm reiterating what Don said, it's really great. And I do want to say something about the ELCA archives. Because when we needed to find something about a person we were interested in, you asked about this earlier, the archives personnel really helped us out. Kathy Lundeen is the current person that I've leaned on also for some of my own writing. So if you ask her about a story and have an idea when it appeared, she can send you a copy of it and maybe send you some photos that you didn't know existed.
Okay.
So that the archives is a real gem in our church.
So okay. Mark and I have notated our lists in our research. And I was particularly interested in looking at some of the, not just individuals, but some of these broad sweeping things that you can see looking over 20 years of those magazines.
Right.
And notating them, anything that had to do with civil rights, Black theology, because there were conversations about that in the Lutheran magazine, too, periodically. But any of that kind of stuff. So that could be notated and available to anybody else who wants to begin to look at some of those kinds of trends.
Okay, great. Well, I can't believe that our time has come to an end. More and more questions, as you were talking, more and more questions came to mind for me. And but I unlike a listening audience, I will have the opportunity to ask you at another time beyond this. But I want to thank you for sharing your work, your research, and continuing research on this project. My guests today have been Mark Staples and Don Stewart, and who have been working on the Black Lutheran History Project as a continuation of the work of our dear friend and colleague, Dr. Richard Stewart. Thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.